Captain Corelli's Mandolin by Louis de Bernier. Dramatized by Katie Hymns. Invasion of the Italians.
Pelagia returned from the well with a jar upon her shoulder and set it down in the yard. She was feeling strong and whole and had been enjoying having the house to herself. When she entered the kitchen, she was seized with consternation. There was a stranger seated at the kitchen table, a most horrible and wild stranger who looked worse than the brigands of childhood tales. The man was quite motionless, except for the rhythmic fluttering and trembling of his hands. His head was utterly concealed beneath a cascade of matted hair that seemed to have no form or colour. His face was covered in an enormous and disorderly beard. In place of shoes, his feet were bound with bandages that were caked with old, congealed blood. He smelt inconceivably foul. It was the reek of rotting flesh, of suppurating wounds, of perspiration, urine, and fear.
My father's out. He should be back tomorrow.
You're happy anyway, singing.
Yes.
Ice.
Sorry?
I said ice.
Sorry, I don't understand what you mean.
I'm talking about the obscenity of ice.
If you come back tomorrow...
I'll never be warm again.
I don't think I can help. Tomorrow, my father will be here.
This snow is whipped away by the wind, and the ice is in ridges. Sharper than knives. And when you fall, you're cut. Look at my hands. And the ice, it screams. It shrieks. And voices call to you out of it. And you look into it and you see people. They beckon and wave and they mock. And you shoot into the ice, but they don't shut up.
You really can't stay here. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is.
I saw my father. My father who died, and he was stuck in the ice. And his eyes were staring at me, and his mouth was open, and I hacked with my bayonet to get him out. And when I got him out, it was someone else.
The pine martin Psipsina entered the room, sniffed the air, and ran across the floor. She approached the Neolithic man and burrowed in the remains of a pocket and emerged triumphant with a small cube of cheese.
At least Psipsina remembers me.
Madra?
Don't touch me, Bella. I've got lice and I stink and... I didn't know what to do with myself, so I came here. Do you have any coffee?
I can't believe it.
Believe it?
Mandra.
Do you have any coffee?
You never wrote to me.
That's because I can't write.
You can't write?
Exactly.
Not at all?
Not a word.
I didn't know that. Couldn't someone else have written for you?
I couldn't dictate to a comrade. I couldn't do that.
I thought you were dead, Mandra. I thought you didn't love me anymore.
I got your letters. I couldn't read them, but I got them. I kept them where they would keep me warm. Yeah. And one day I hoped that you would read them out loud to me. Read them to me now.
Later, Mandra. Not now.
You know, all the time, I kept going because of you. I was brave because of you. I even prayed to you. I had you before my eyes like a cross at Easter, like an icon. And I fought for you more than I fought for Greece. The bombs, the shells, the ice... the night attacks, the bodies, the friends I lost. And when the Germans came, I got through the lines and all I could think of was Bellagia. I've got to get home to Bellagia. And now only this animal recognizes me.
Mandras's mother, Drosula, was as ugly as the mythical wife of Antiphates, and yet she had married a fine man, born a child, and become widely loved. During Mandras's absence, Pelagia had found her way down to Kyria Drosula's house almost every day. They had cried and hugged each other, repeating that Mandras must be all right, because they would have heard if he wasn't. It was to Drosula that Pelagia now ran, and the two women returned breathless to find him in the same position, still absently caressing Psipsina at the kitchen table.
It is him. I told you he was in an awful state.
Christos. Christos. Mandra.
Mother.
Let's go.
What are you doing?
Come on, Mandra.
Where are we going?
Drosula!
I'm sorry, but I'm not having my son sitting in a respectable house in that state. It's just too much shame.
Out in the courtyard, Drosula inspected Mandras's hair and teeth and ears.
You see, Bellagia, what a state these men get into when there are no women to look after them. It's disgraceful and there's no excuse for it. No, there isn't. I don't care if he's been to war. Go and put a big pot to boil because I'm going to wash him from head to foot. But first of all, I'm going to get rid of this awful mop.
Oh, the scratches on his head are inflamed and the glands on his neck are enlarged. I'll fetch some oil of sassafras.
When she returned to the courtyard, Mandras's head was entirely shorn.
My head is cold.
Oof. What can we do about that?
You paint this on the scalp and the skin quite thick, and it even kills ringworm if he's got that too.
Oof. It stinks.
Yes.
Here goes.
It stings.
Yes, it stings and it stinks. You are a lucky man. Shall we do the rest of him?
Well, I'm not sure.
Don't you want to see what you're getting?
It's all right, I can wait.
Well, you can help me with everything else, and you'll have to tell me what to do with the rest of him from the other side of the door.
Finally, they reached his feet. Pelagia did not feel very much like a healer when she saw those feet. Necrotic, multicoloured pulp. Pus and scab and yellow maggots writhed and squirmed in flesh that was all but dead.
Okay. It's good news. There's no gangrene.
Oh.
There's no granulation. No bone has died and separated itself.
Oh.
Although I must admit, I've only ever done this before on a dog.
Can you tell us what the rest of this stuff is?
On the shoulder, it's favus. Mm. You need sulfur and salicylic acid for that. It's a kind of honeycomb ringworm. It's lucky it didn't get into the hair because then he would have lost it. And these red punctures are body lice. Mm. We've got to burn all his clothes and shave him all over to get the eggs off his hairs.
Mm-hmm.
And we cover him with eucalyptus oil and paraffin emulsion.
He's not much of a bargain, is he?
You fall in love with a person, not the body.
Romantic claptrap.
Hold him still.
Love enters by the eyes and also leaves by the eyes. And in case you're wondering why my husband fell for me, ugly as I am, it was because he had strange tastes.
Oh.
Thank God. Otherwise, I would still be a maid.
When Dr. Yanis returned the following morning, he found a corpse-like man asleep in his daughter's bed, and Pelagia and Drosula asleep in his own. The house stank of garlic, soap, ammonia, iodine, sulfur, sick flesh, vinegar, burned hair. In short, it smelled of a busy medical practice.
Baba, what do you think?
If I could cook, I would exchange jobs with you. In fact, I might retire. Well done, Coritzibu. I have never been so prodigiously proud.
Physically, Mandras was on the road to recovery, but over the following weeks, his mental state devolved to something more unmanageable than infancy.
I've diagnosed his behaviour at different times as anergic stupor, melancholic, resistive, and catatonic stupor. The odd way in which it's been all of these at one time or another indicates to me that in actual fact it's never been any of them.
So what's wrong with him then?
He thinks that nobody wants him. And he's doing this to force us to demonstrate that we do.
But I don't want him, thought Pelagia, as she sat near his bed, crocheting the matrimonial bedspread that had never grown beyond the size of a towel. Meanwhile, war was getting closer. The entire island was waiting for invasion, and a great nostalgia rose up over everyone like a palpable mist. Every last moment of freedom and security was rolled about the tongue and tasted and remembered. In the church, Father Arsenios attempted to find words to a prayer, perplexed by a novel sensation of having been let down by God. He had become so accustomed to the idea that he was condemned forever to be the one who had let God down.
Παναγία μου, τι μας έχεις κάνει? Are you going to let us all die for nothing? Why don't you do something? Lord Jesus, Son of God, if you're not going to do anything, then I will.
It is our custom to compare the many nations that have usurped this island to the Turks. Thus, the Romans and the Normans were worse than the Turks. The Catholics were even worse. The Turks themselves were probably not as bad as we imagine. And so, paradoxically, they were not as bad as themselves. The Russians were infinitely better, and the French were marginally better. The British were worse than the Turks for some of the time, and the best of all of them for the rest. With the British, you can be sure of nothing, except that they will treat you despicably, and then make up for it 100-fold. It is with a heavy heart that I record here the fact that they have abandoned us to our fate because they have judged that the war will not be decided in Greece. I wait despondently in the knowledge that Corfu has fallen and that this may be the last thing I ever write. The imminence of invasion convinces me that life can be a sad and weary thing and that death might conceivably be a time when I will rest once more with my wife in whatever place she might have gone. I have been both happy and fortunate. Happy in my marriage and fortunate in my daughter. Let it not have been for nothing.
At this point, Mandras began a period of hysterical rage. It began with shouting, proceeded to a bizarre episode in which he attempted to amputate his leg with a spoon, and continued to a stage in which he lashed out at Pelagia and Drosula, and concluded on April the 30th with a terrifying lucid wrath in which he appeared to have recovered his sanity completely and insisted that Pelagia should read to him her letters.
Agapeton, Agapeton, I love you and miss you and worry for you. I can't wait for you to come back. I want to take your dear face in my hands and kiss you until my spirit flies with the angels.
Don't stop. Why are you stopping?
I want to take you in my arms and love you so that time stops and the stars fall.
Inside, Pelagia cringed in the same way she did when she was reminded of something winsome that she had done or said as a child. It was with relief that she reached the later letters. Her voice lightened, and she began to relax.
Mandra, I have seen your mother, and she tells me she has no news of you either.
I don't want that. I don't want those bits. I don't want to hear how upset everyone is that I don't write. I want the other bits.
Pelagia continued to read the letters, omitting the parts in which she named the variety and quality of her affection.
The letters, they're getting too short. Do you think I don't know what this means? Look at this. Four lines, that's all. Read it.
You never write to me. And at first I was sad and worried. And now I realise you cannot care. And this has caused me to lose my affection also. I want you to know that I have decided to release you from your promises. I am sorry.
But Pelagia did not read these exact words.
My darling, please come back to me soon. I miss you so much and long for you more than you can imagine. Keep safe from the bullets and...
And what?
And I don't know how much to tell you I love you.
Pelagia felt herself deaden inside as she desperately invented endearments for this man she had grown first to pity and then to hate.
The Italians are here. They're here. It's the invasion.
I need to be with my father.
Go, Gorizia. Go.
Pelagia found her father standing in his doorway as everyone else stood in theirs.
History. All this time I've been writing history, and now history is happening before my very eyes.
Moments later, a column of men marched by in unison. At their head was Captain Antonio Corelli of the 33rd Regiment of Artillery, and slung across his back was a case containing the mandolin that he named Antonia, because it was the other half of himself.
Bella Bambina, at 9 o'clock! Eyes left!
In unison, the heads of the troops snapped in Pelagia's direction, and for one astonishing minute, every soldier pulled some comical expression at her, or blew her a kiss.
Shh, don't laugh. It's our duty to hate them.
Sorry, Baba. I couldn't help it.
In the Caffinian, the men related Italian jokes.
What is the shortest book in the world? The Italian Book of War Heroes.
What is the name of Hitler's dog? Benito Mussolini.
Why do Italians wear moustaches? To be reminded of their mothers!
There was a long interlude, during which the two populations stood off from each other, diffusing by means of jokes the guilty suspicion on the one side and the livid resentment on the other. And then a decision was made to billet officers upon suitable members of the local population. The first thing Pelagia knew about it was when she returned from the well to find a plump Italian officer looking around and making notes.
What are you doing here, Kyrios? The
plump Italian officer did not speak Greek.
I must go and fetch my father. Aspettami! Vengo!
Then Pelagia ran to fetch her father from the Caffinian.
Buongiorno!
Buongiorno. I do hope you enjoy your short stay on our island.
What makes you think it will be short?
Well, you have been expelled from Ethiopia and Libya, and soon, I hope, you will be expelled from Kefalonia.
You speak Italian very well.
Oh, thank you.
We are very badly in need of translators to work with the populace. There would be privileges. It seems that no one here speaks Italian.
You mean that none of you speak Greek?
It was only an idea.
I think you'll find that those of us who do speak Italian will suddenly lose our memory when required to do so.
Of course. I meant no offence.
No. Perhaps you could tell me why you've come to my house.
The fact is, and I'm sorry to say this, and it is with great regret.
Yes?
We shall be obliged to billet an officer on these premises.
I see.
Do you?
No.
Oh.
There are only two rooms, my daughter's and my own, so you see it's quite impossible. And it's also an outrage. You are a quartermaster, are you not?
Yes, senor.
So you have access to medical supplies.
Oh, I have access to everything.
I am short of many things.
And I am short of accommodation.
So, it's a deal.
That's very good news, Sidio. Anything you want, you send me a message via Captain Corelli. I'm sure you'll find him very charming.
When the quartermaster had gone, taking with him a long list of medical supplies, Pelagia anxiously asked her father,
Am I to cook for him? And what with? There is almost no food. And where is he to sleep?
Oh, he will have my bed.
Oh, no, Baba. He will have mine. I will sleep in the kitchen.
If you insist, Koritsimu.
I do.
The secret of being occupied is to exploit the exploiters. It is also knowing how to resist. I think we shall be very horrible to this captain.
I, Carlo Piero Guercio, arrived in Cefalonia in the middle of May, when the Italian invasion was already well established. After the torments of war, it seemed to me that I had stepped off the boat and into Arcadia. The impression of peace was so overwhelming, it left me feeling tearful, grateful, and incredulous. I first came across Captain Corelli in the latrines of the encampment. His battery had a little opera club known as La Scala that would meet at the same time every morning. Sitting in a row on the wooden plank, where their trousers round their ankles, were two baritones, three tenors, and a bass. When the captain heard me singing, he realized I was another baritone, and I was immediately volunteered to join the opera society.
In the early evening, Captain Corelli arrived, driven by his new baritone, Bombardier Carlo Piero Guercio. The captain looked around him. There was a goat tied to a tree, washing hanging from a line, a vivid bougainvillea, and an old table upon which lay a small heap of chopped onions. There was also a young woman with dark eyes and a large cooking knife. The captain fell to his knees.
Please, don't kill me, signorina. I am innocent.
Please excuse the captain, signorina. He's always like this. He just can't help it.
Please get up.
The other man, the one who wasn't the captain, was huge, as big as Velisarios.
I am Captain Antonio Corelli, but you may call me Maestro if you wish. And this is Carlo Guercio. He is one of our heroes. He has 100 medals for saving lives and none for taking them.
A brave Italian is a freak of nature.
But this man rescued a fallen comrade in the open field, under fire.
Basta.
He is famous all over the army, and he refused promotion, too.
Antonio.
I tell you, he is a one-man ambulance.
Shh, stop.
And what is your name, signorina?
Pelagia.
Have I seen you before?
Yes.
You are the girl we marched past. Oh, no. Non è vero. Mea culpa. Mea maxima culpa. Oh, forgive me, Father, for I have sinned.
Ah, Captain Corelli.
Ah, sì, dottore.
Captain, I would like to know why everyone in our schools is being obliged to learn Italian.
Pelagia smiled to herself. She could not have calculated how many times she had heard her father ranting about the necessity and perfect reasonableness of having compulsory Italian in schools.
In the Italian Empire, it is logical that everyone should learn Italian.
Pathetic.
Your father is...
Yes, he is.
Where am I to sleep tonight?
You will have my bed.
Oh, no, that is out of the question. Tonight I shall sleep in the yard, and tomorrow I shall request alternative accommodation.
The captain says he's going to go.
Go where?
Somewhere else.
What? How am I supposed to browbeat him if he isn't here? And anyway, he seems like a nice young man.
Papa, you made him feel like a flea. I almost felt sorry for him.
You did feel sorry for him, Carissimo. I saw it in your face.
Young man, you are staying here whether you like it or not. Otherwise, it's quite possible that the quartermaster will give us someone even worse than you.
But in your daughter's room, Dottore, it wouldn't be right.
She'll be comfortable in the kitchen, Captain. I don't care how bad you feel about it. That is not my problem. I am not the aggressor. Do you understand me?
Si, senor.
Good.
That night, as Pelagia was drifting off to sleep, she heard a muffled cry. And shortly afterwards, the captain appeared in the kitchen, a towel wrapped around his waist.
Forgive me, but there appears to be an enormous weasel on my bed.
That's not a weasel. That's Cipsina. She's our pet. She always sleeps on my bed.
What is she exactly?
Haven't you heard of Greek cats?
The captain looked at her suspiciously, shrugged his shoulders and returned to his room. He tried a tentative stroke of the pine marten's head. Cipsina sniffed at the captain, surmised that she did not recognize him, and bit his finger. The following morning, Captain Antonio Corelli waited in vain for Carlo to come and fetch him. As it happened, Carlo had broken a shackle on the suspension of his jeep.
Sacco di merda.
Carlo already possessed a deep horror of letting the captain down, a horror which was shared by all the men who served under him. He abandoned the jeep and began to trudge towards the village. On his way, he passed Velisarios, and the two men looked at one another with something like recognition. Both of these titans had become accustomed to the saddening suspicion within themselves that they were freaks. They were both so astonished to see each other that for a moment they forgot they were enemies.
Palmera.
Buongiorno.
Carlo offered Velisarios one of his atrocious cigarettes, and Velisarios took one, and they made sour faces to each other as they drew on the smoke that was sharp as needles.
Nascesso d'un bolamo.
Oh, diavolo con la guerra.
Meanwhile, Corelli waited.
Buongiorno.
Oh, buongiorno. I trust you slept badly.
Your cat bit me.
Let me see. Ooh, it's very swollen. It'll probably go septic. Pine martens can have a nasty bite.
It's a pine marten?
What did you think it was? If I were you, I'd show it to a doctor.
Yes, thank you.
No doubt I'll be seeing you this evening.
Yes, sir.
When Pelagia came out into the yard, she found the captain throwing Lemoni up and down in the air.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno, querida Pelagia. It seems that my driver has been delayed.
Lemoni, off you go now. I'm sure someone is missing you, ne?
Yes, sir!
Ciao! Oh, why did you send her away?
Fraternization. It's indecent. Even in a child.
Signorina, in times like this, in a war, all of us have to make the most of what little innocent pleasure there is. One day I would like a little girl like that. For my own.
Where are you going?
To find Carlo.
On the day of the invasion, Mandras had climbed out of bed cursing and completely cured of his madness.
Hello, is your father in? I've still got some bad skin on my arm.
Let me look at it.
Was hoping to see the organ grinder rather than the monkey.
Mandras had heard this metaphor at the front, and he'd waited a long time for the opportunity to use it. It had struck him as witty and charming, and he wanted nothing so much as to be able to charm Pelagia back into the affection he feared he had lost. But Pelagia's eyes flashed fire, and Mandras's heart sank.
I didn't mean it. It was a joke.
Do you want me to look at it or not?
Yes. Thank you.
I'll give you some more iodine.
I'm going to join the partisans. I'm leaving tomorrow. I'll take my boat to Manolas.
What about the submarines? And the warships?
Well, it's worth the risk. If I go at night, I can sail by the stars.
What does your mother say?
Well, I was hoping you could tell her.
Are you such a coward, then?
I am with my mother.
Take this with you and apply it every 3 days.
Thank you.
Promise me one thing.
What?
Whenever you're about to do something terrible, think of me and then don't do it.
I'm a Greek, not a fascist. And I will think of you every minute.
God go with you.
And with you.
When the captain awoke the next morning, the doctor had already left for the Cophenian, but Pelagia was still sleeping on the kitchen floor. He would have liked to brew himself a cup of coffee, but didn't want to disturb or embarrass her. Instead, he returned to his room and took Antonia out of her case. With great concentration, he set himself to playing a very difficult and rapid piece by Paganini. Pelagia lay awake, wondering if she was still asleep. There was a most beautiful noise coming from somewhere in the house. A shaft of sunlight was breaking through the window, and she realized she had overslept.
Calimera, Pelagia.
Coffee?
Sì, grazie.
That was very beautiful.
I was only practicing.
Can I see?
My mother dropped it once, and for a moment I thought I was going to kill her.
Will you play me something, then?
Whenever people ask me to play something, I forget what pieces I know. I know. I'll play you a polka. It's by Persichini. By the way, signorina, I couldn't help noticing that you have a derringer in the pocket of your apron. I understand why you would want to have, and in fact, I haven't seen it at all, but you must realise what would happen if someone else saw it. Especially a German. Allora, the polka. Ah, it slipped. That's the trouble with these roundbacks from Naples. I often think I should get a Portuguese one with a flatback, but where does one get one of those in times of war?
Mandras hated the mountains of Rumeli. There were mountains at home, of course, but they were ringed by the open sea. These mountains abolished and enclosed him like the embrace of an enormous, ugly and effusive aunt. His intention was to join the first Andartes he came across. By chance, he came across Hector, commander to the local branch of ELAS, which was a thinly disguised communist organization that showed no real interest in fighting the Italians and assisting in the war. Hector was astute enough to see that Mandras was a lost soul, a little embittered without knowing why, young enough to be impressed, and lonely and sad enough to be befriended.
Hurry up!
Sorry!
Don't lag behind!
Where are we going?
We're going to see what you're made of.
Will there be anything to eat?
Later. Now stop asking stupid questions.
Hector led Mandras to a tiny village which seemed to consist of nothing but rangy dogs and sagging houses. There was one house guarded by an Andarte.
Bring out the traitor!
Zignomi, the daughter
lasks. Beat him.
What?
If you want to be with us, you've got to learn to administer justice. This man has been found guilty. Now beat him. Harder. Harder? What are you, a woman?
Is that enough?
Now kill him.
What?
Shoot him in the head. What's the matter?
Mandras knelt down and placed the barrel against the old man's head. He hesitated, appalled with himself somewhere in the back of his mind. But he could not lose face.
What was it the old man did?
He was a dirty old thief.
What did he steal?
A bottle of whiskey?
Pelagia treated the captain as badly as she could, but he remained polite and submissive. One day he left his pistol on the table, and it came to her that she could actually shoot him when he came through the door, and then run away to join the Andantes. Instead, she decided to immerse the pistol in water for a few minutes, so that the barrel would go rusty inside, and the mechanism would seize up.
What are you doing?
You frightened me.
I see you're engaged in a bit of mischief.
I was washing it. It was terribly oily and greasy.
Really?
Did I do something wrong?
I had no idea you were so touchingly ignorant. Oh, I suppose you've done me a favour. I should have dismantled it for cleaning and oiling a long time ago.
Aren't you angry with me?
Let's just leave one another alone, shall we? I'll leave you alone, and you can leave me alone.
What was that for?
Oh, you have no right to be here.
Pelagia soon found a new irritation to replace the old, except that it was an irritation against herself. It seemed that she could not help looking at him, and he was always catching her. There was something about him sitting at the table as he waded through mountains of military paperwork. Every time she looked up, his eyes would flick to hers. For a few seconds, they would look at one another, and then she would return her attention to her crochet.
I've got to stop. I won't look at him for another half an hour. Damn! He saw me. He is smiling at me. He is playing a game with me. Okay. Next time, I won't break away. I will stare and stare and stare.
They looked at each other for what seemed like hours while the doctor read his book. Corelli's face fell out of focus and she concentrated on the bridge of his nose. He did not look away, and just as giddiness was beginning to confound her, he set himself to pulling faces.
I won! Ho vinto io! Ho vinto io! Sono il campione!
What? What have you won?
You cheated!
I am the
Baba,
one!
Stai he cheated! It's not fair! Stai you ridendo. Cheated!
Whatever, no!
The doctor knew full well what was next and was already working out in advance how best to deal with it. One day it happened that Captain Corelli did not go into work because an earthquake was vibrating in his head.
Oh, voglio morire. I want to die. I just want to die.
You've got to drink all this water. It's the only cure.
I haven't got a hangover. I'm very ill, in fact.
Drink. I've never seen anyone quite so drunk. Not even at the Feast of the Saint.
Oh, God, what did I do?
Carlo brought you back at 2 in the morning. To be exact, he crashed the jeep into the wall outside, carried you inside like a baby, tripped over, hurt his knees and started shouting and swearing. Then he lay on the table in the yard and went to sleep. He's still there.
Really?
And you woke up and knelt down in front of me and sang Io sono ricco e tu sei bella at the top of your voice and completely out of tune. And then you tried to kiss my feet.
Out of tune? Was I really out of tune?
And then you declared your eternal love and then you were sick.
My battery won the football match against the Germans. It doesn't happen every day.
Lieutenant Weber called round early this morning. He said that your side cheated.
Well, we didn't.
I don't like Lieutenant Weber. He looks at me as though I was an animal.
Oh, he's a Nazi. He thinks that I'm an animal as well. It can't be helped. He's young, You'll grow out of it.
He said that you cheated.
Oh, my head hurts.
It seems to me that you Italians are always playing football, getting drunk, or chasing local girls.
You can't blame the boys for chasing the girls, because that's what boys do. And some girls do very well out of it.
You know perfectly well that lots of girls are bullied into it and driven into it out of economic necessity.
Oh, give me some water.
Certainly.
Oh! Oh, God! Are you mad?
No, I'm just angry.
Everything you say and do is because you want me to apologise. In every look, I see nothing but reproaches. How do you think I feel? Why did you ask yourself that? Do you think I have a vocation for suppressing the Greeks? Ugh. Do you think I am the Duce, that I commanded myself to be here? È un casino. It's lousy. It's all lousy. But I can't do anything about it. But I apologise. I apologise. There. Are you satisfied?
Are you seriously saying that you are a victim as much as us?
She walked over to the table and looked out of the window. No answer came from the captain. He was looking at her silhouette and a tune came into his head. He could hear the notes that sang the praise of Pelagia. He heard three simple chords and a martial melody that implied a world of grace. The tune was a march for a proud woman who prosecuted war with hard words and kindnesses. A few days later, they passed each other at the door, she going out and he returning from work. Unself-consciously, she put one hand up to his left cheek and, in passing, kissed him on the other. It was not until she reached the entrance to the yard that she realised what she had done.
Kyria Pelagia!
I thought you were my father. I always kiss him like that when he comes in.
Laura, we are both old and small.
If you go on about this, I shall never speak to you again.
Oh, no. Have mercy, Kyria. Shoot me, flog me, but don't say you'll never speak to me.
Oh, please, get up. It was a mistake.
A significant mistake.
An insignificant mistake.
Please, can we step inside the house a moment?
Why?
Just for a moment.
Inside the kitchen, he clamped his hands on either side of her head, kissed her lingeringly and flamboyantly on the forehead.
Mi scusi. I thought you were the doctor. Don't make anything of it.
Then he sprinted across the yard and down the street, and she stared after him in amazement.
In Captain Corelli's Mandolin by Louis de Bernier, dramatized by Katie Himes, Pelagia was played by Celia Mayras, Dr. Yanis by Stephen Greif. Captain Corelli by Daniel Philpott. Carlo by Anthony Pasela. Mandras by Chris Pavlo. And the narrator was Tom Goodman Hill. Drasula was played by Anna Sava. Velisarios by Alexi K. Campbell. Father Arsenios by Alex Zorbas. Lemony by Anya Gordon. Hector by Nitin Ganatra. And the Italian officer by Simon Treves. Original mandolin music was composed and played by Alison Stevens, and the songs of La Scala were sung by the BBC singers. The director was David Hunter.